Edition of Twat Radio. I'm your host, Bit Viper. Today we're going to be talking about something a little bit different. We're going to be talking about remote control hacking and why would you want to do it, how do you do it, and all the details. Well, my adventures with remote control hacking started about a year and a half ago when I got a new TV, and it came with two different remotes, which increased my remote total to like six. So I'm looking at all my remotes on the table thinking I got to do something about this. I already had bought a universal remote control that was pretty cheap, like $7 or $8 from Walmart a year before then. And I thought I was covering all my bases because it was a learning remote control. So any remotes that it didn't already have built into that, you know, those big lists that they come with, I could just teach it button for button until all my remotes were in there. So I thought it was all good. Well, it turns out that the memory in these remotes is such that you can only record or learn about 7 or 8 new buttons before it fills up. It might be different for different buttons that you learn, but that was my experience. So I was kind of screwed. I thought, well, this Cinema 7 remote control I have here just isn't going to cut it. So I went online and I went to Remote Central and other places and looked up different remotes and thought, you know, I'll spend a few extra bucks to cap off my system, my entertainment system. People would commonly post posts like, I need a remote that does this, 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 and this, and which one do you guys all recommend? People would give out different recommendations, but there'd always be a couple posts, something like, well, you know, you can get all that functionality if you just buy one of these cheap $5 JP1 remotes and hack it yourself. Well, after seeing a couple of those, I started looking up what this JP1 remote hacking was all about, and I found a neat website called www.hifi-remote.com. That's hifi-remote.com. The story, I guess, all starts with a company called Universal Electronics Incorporated, UEI. They made a chip one day, or they designed a chip that was designed to be cheap and expandable and basically ubiquitous. They sold it under their own One For All brand name, so there are One For All branded remotes that have it. Radio Shack also licensed the technology, so many Radio Shack remotes have it, as well as a lot of OEM remotes have the JP1 or UEI chip inside of it. So what's neat about this chip is that someone figured out a way to actually access it using a port that's on the PC board that it's soldered to, and you can actually, and someone actually reverse engineered the memory structures and everything, so you could actually add a lot of new functionality to it that they never intended you to be able to do. For example, you can manage your macros a lot easier on your computer. You can make the macros run faster. You could overcome really stupid restrictions, like some buttons can't be programmed in some modes and whatever. You can also add upgrades, which are protocols and devices. We'll talk about that in a second. And even remotes that don't learn, quote unquote, can still be programmed as if they had learned. So that's pretty neat. Other things like you can add more devices than the remote has device buttons for. For example, you can turn an 8-device remote into a 16-device remote. Oh, even crazy things like have one button do multiple things, depending if you hold it down or double tap it or press it quickly. It goes on and on. There's all kinds of neat things you can do. Well, I want to talk real quickly before I go into the hacking, how remote control actually works. What happens when you press a button on your remote control? Well, what it does is pretty simple. It just sends out, using the infrared light, a 2 bytes of information. Sometimes it's 3 bytes, and maybe sometimes it's 1, but for the average, it's 2. And the first byte is called the device ID. And since it's a byte, that means it has 256 combinations. So a device ID is kind of like an IP address. Every device, like a VCR or a TV, has its own device ID number. For example, my TV might be device ID number 29, and another TV could be 42 or whatever. So the device ID is a way to get the device's attention that you're trying to command. The second byte is called the command code. And since it's also a byte, that means you have 256 possible commands, which is quite a bit. Now you might be asking yourself, if there's only 256 addresses, how come there's not a lot of overlap? How come a Toshiba remote doesn't accidentally control a Sony device sometimes? And the reason why is because the way the bytes are transmitted is different for different brands. For example, Sony has one method of communicating the bytes. Hitachi has another, and NEC has another, and so forth. And these styles of sending the bytes are called protocols. So the way protocols are different from each other is, I mean, they can vary a lot of different things. For example, the carrier frequency that this signal is sent on could be different. It could range from perhaps 30 to 40 kilohertz. It could use pulse width modulation, space code, shift coding, and other methods. So what constitutes a 1 in protocol A is very different than what constitutes a 1 in protocol B. So the point is, with all these different protocols, you rarely, if ever, have overlaps. So this JP1 chip, it's called JP1, by the way, because the name of the port on the little PC board inside the remote is called JP1. So everything from this point on was called JP1 hacking, or referenced as that. The JP1 chip already has a whole bunch of protocols programmed into it, and it also has a list of maps. Well, a map is simply a memory structure that contains everything the remote needs to know to control a specific device. For example, a map would include A, the protocol to use to control the device, B, the device ID to use, what number is the device, and C, the actual command code to use for each function or button. Like which byte number to give for, say, fast forward and so forth. So by hacking the remote, you could add new protocols and maps as well as a lot of other stuff. So what do you need to actually do this? Well, obviously you need a JP1 remote. Now, unfortunately, they're not quite as common as they used to be. I guess technology has marched on and there's newer remotes, newer chips, but you can still easily buy them on eBay. There's a list of remotes at hifiremote.com. But once you get one, you probably get one for about 10 bucks on eBay. But once you get one, you need a way to actually interface to it. Now, the way you actually do this is you take off the remote, the battery cover, and you look inside, take the batteries out, and you'll probably, even without having to take anything apart, see a little hole where you can see into, you know, to the actual PC board or the circuit board. And you'll see an actual socket, which is just a whole bunch of holes, kind of like the if anyone ever modded an Xbox, the LPC socket there is, looks pretty much the same. I think it's a 2x3 array of holes. Or you might be lucky and have an actual header installed in the socket. The header is those pins that stick up that you can attach a cable to. Well, if there's no header, you got to go get a header and install it, solder it to the board. And that's pretty much the only modification you need to do to the remote. The other thing you need is a cable that connects from that header to your computer. And you can make one yourself. I happen to make one myself for the parallel port because I had some stuff lying around that could work. I just needed a couple diodes and some other small things. But they're also, I mean, you can buy them online. There are ones for the USB port, for serial port, parallel port, whatever. And they usually come with headers as well, so basically everything you need. The final thing you need is software. You need ir.exe, a Windows program, and then either a Java program called Remote Master or an Excel spreadsheet called Keymap Master. And you can find both of those programs on hifiremote.com. IR.exe is the program that actually communicates with your remote. It saves data, loads data, and the master programs, the Java or the spreadsheet, is a way to take a file called a device code and map its information to your particular remote. A device code contains virtually everything the map has I described earlier, the device ID, the protocol, and the byte number or command code for each function. You need to take that and map the function to the actual button on your remote. The mapping is necessary because the fast forward button on one remote will have a different hardware address than the fast forward button on another remote. So you got to adjust the coding that you're about to program your remote with to compensate for these different hardware addresses. So that's what the master programs allow you to do. It sounds complicated, but it's actually, they make it really easy. For example, I use the Excel spreadsheet, and there's a button in the spreadsheet. There's a ton of macros in it, and one of the macros is a button that will load out the device list or load the device list file. You then select your remote, and then it'll gray out any buttons that you don't have on your remote, only leaving the buttons that you do. And then you actually just do a simple process of mapping each button on your remote to the function in the device file. For example, I wanted to add my Xbox remote or Xbox functionality to my Cinema 7 remote control. Oh, by the way, the Cinema 7 I mentioned happened to be JP1 compatible, so I was able to take my device and solve all my problems, and one of them was the Xbox. So I loaded the Xbox device file into the spreadsheet, and then I simply labeled or I matched each function to the button on my remote that made sense. For example, you know, something, some maps are obvious. For example, the pause button on the device code maps to the pause button on my remote. Other mappings are a little less obvious, since a button on your remote might not match the exact wording of the device code function, but it's usually close enough to be clear. For example, instead of OK, it might be Enter, and you know, you can make the obvious decision what you want to do there. All right, so once you're all set making your maps, you can export all this info into what's called a device upgrade. It's actually just pasted into the clipboard from the spreadsheet, and then you enter the IR program, the IR.exe I mentioned earlier. You go to the upgrades and make a new upgrade by pasting into the new upgrade box, and then it's in there. And then you finally tell the IR program which device button on the remote points to that upgrade, and you're good to go. For example, I made my DVD button point at my added Xbox device, since I use the Xbox as my DVD player. Okay, and this also worked out well because I have a TiVo, which uses a protocol that didn't even come with my Cinema 7 remote. But someone had the protocol online at the Hi-Fi remote website, and I just added that, and I was good to go. I didn't have to use the learning commands. I'm not going to go into more detail on the actual procedures for doing all this because it's really well documented, and it'd be pretty complicated to understand with me talking to you like this. But there's some other neat stuff I wanted to quickly mention. When a JP1 remote learns a command by capturing it from another remote, I mentioned I tried doing this initially, and I only could do about 7 or 8 buttons learned before it ran out of memory. The reason why is because when it learns another function from another remote, it stores that information as a digital image, kind of like a WAV file stores info for sound. It's very bulky, so you can only learn those few commands before you run out of memory. But remember, a command can be boiled down to a very small set of parameters: the device ID, the protocol, the command number, and so forth. But since the remote doesn't have the smarts to decode what it sees into the actual source, it just stores it what it learned as a dumb digital image, which is very inefficient. What's neat, though, about this program, IR.exe, is that it can load the image from the remote and actually decode what it means. So it can say, for example, that, oh, I understand that this is using the whatever protocol, and here's the device number, and here's the device command, or the command code. And you could take all that information, and you can make your own device file in the Excel spreadsheet that way, and make your own upgrade, even if no one else has ever done it on the internet, so you can make your own device codes. This is nice because you can, instead of just learning 7 buttons of one remote the old-fashioned way, you can actually efficiently program dozens of new remotes and still have plenty of memory left over for a whole bunch of more stuff. So it's definitely the way to go. Okay, I want to wrap it up here. There's a ton of other areas you can delve into if you want to add functionality, but the final thing I want to mention is the topic of extenders. Extenders are programs that actually replace the main program that is already on your remote. By replacing the main program, you can gain a lot of new things. The easiest and most common benefit is speeding up your macros. For example, I originally had a macro on my unhacked remote that turned on my TV, my receiver, and my high-definition satellite box. It was a simple macro, but it actually consisted of 6 different button presses. And the macro took about 2, maybe even 3 seconds to run, which meant that if you didn't point the remote at the entertainment center for the entire 2-second duration, or 3 seconds, you'd have some things on and some things off. So you'd be out of sync, which was a pain in the ass. So when I hacked my remote, I actually added an extender. This actually sped the macro up, so it ran almost instantly. So that wasn't a problem anymore. All right, so the two websites, if you want to learn more, is hi-fi-remote.com. There's also a group on Yahoo called the JP1 group. So you can go to groups.yahoo.com/group/JP1. They have files and discussions as well there. I hope this has been interesting for you. It certainly saved me a lot of money, and I learned a lot about remote controls. If you have any questions, you can send email to bitviper@gmail.com. Until then, happy hacking.